This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This Tennis.com podcast is brought to you by ASICS. Sound mind, sound body. You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hey everyone, Tennis.com podcast here on a Monday. I am Ed McGrogan with senior writers Pete Bodo and Steve Tigner. We're here, start of the Madrid Masters, combined event going to be going on this week, followed right up by Rome, and then shortly after is the French Open. We're going to look at that event a little bit. Also this past weekend, two of the big names in that tournament, Juan Martín Del Potro and Novak Djokovic, both won titles. So we're going to hit on both of them right now. We'll start with Del Potro. It's a question we've kind of been asking all year, is when is this guy going to get back? And I wonder with his latest win in Estoril, in a pretty convincing final victory, is Del Potro kind of really already a clay threat that for the French Open? Should we be talking about him in the same line as the other top tier of guys that he's been in the past already?
I think it's time to talk about him that way. He beat Soderling and Verdasco without too much trouble, straight sets. In Estoril, I think he's already been considered back. He made the semis of Indian Wells and lost to Nadal there. He's been to the semis of the French Open, so we know he can play on clay and almost beat Federer and 2009 in that semi. So I think he's another guy suddenly. Now, we were talking about how Nadal was just going to roll through the clay season, but if you put in Djokovic first and now Del Potro, who Del Potro's beaten Nadal three times on hard courts, never lost to him once on clay, then this is another guy who is a legitimate threat to Nadal, and they should play in Madrid.
Yeah. Del Potro's been to the semis or better in every event he's played since Australia. His number is deceptive. His ranking number, I don't know what he is, 43?
He's 32.
He's going to get seeded in the French Open, which I think is a relief to pretty much everybody else.
But that's a deceptive ranking. Yeah. He's far better than 32 these days.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is realizing, players, media, they certainly know that when Del Potro has kind of found his form, which it appears he has, he is... I think many people are just expecting him to kind of get back into that shape that he was in 2009. I mean, fairly or unfairly, those high expectations are placed on him after winning the U.S. Open the way he did. But the thing with him is he's just an all-surface threat, and I think he's kind of shown that hard or clay. That's where he originally made his run a couple of years ago, starting on the clay and then moving into the hard court events. So
he's a particular threat to Nadal just because of his game. He's tall enough to take those high bouncing balls. He's got the two-handed backhand type of game that's really the only type of game, it seems, that can trouble Nadal and clay.
We just mentioned Soderling there. What about him in this stretch of this sort of little back-to-back Masters thing we have going on this month? You have Indian Wells in Miami a couple months ago. You have Toronto and Cincinnati later. This is the big glut of Masters events here leading into the French. And Soderling has made his mark on clay these past years. What do you kind of expect out of him? Is he kind of, I guess, just your thoughts on Soderling's play maybe going for you, a nice start to the year?
He's a little lost at sea, I think. He had some injury issues in the fall and early this year, and I think he's not quite where he was. You know, it's funny because his arc was rising steadily up, and everyone kept thinking after, like, for about the time of beating Nadal at the French Open in the fourth round match there in 2009, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
His arc was rising and continued to build on that, you know, even at the French Open. And I think now he's hit kind of a rough patch. Probably, you know, going back, it probably has to do with his injury and then losing a little confidence and, you know, not feeling 100%. And now he's, you know, I think he's struggling a little bit.
He seems to be one of those guys who is in this situation that the top guys learned. He started out the season playing a lot, winning a lot, but you realize it's such a long season with so many different parts to it that somebody like Nadal or Federer, they don't really... They've learned to work their way into the year. You know, Soderling came up winning two tournaments. he's going to play as many tournaments as he can and do as well as he can, but it seems like now he had that early peak and he's struggling to get back to that. He fired his coach yesterday, so there's obviously, he doesn't feel like things are going well at the moment.
You talk about threats to Nadal, a couple of guys here. The guy, last person to have beaten Nadal on clay, I believe, is Federer, actually, at this point. The Madrid, a couple of years back?
Mm-hmm.
That was
two
before.
Years ago, Madrid.
Yeah, so Federer has made the Madrid final the past 2 years. Federer just came off of a Monte Carlo loss to Meltzer. It's kind of the same deal with Federer kind of working his way into the season here. We've kind of expected some sort of early round clay losses, but this has kind of been his tournament in recent years too. So, you know, what's kind of your thoughts on him at this point?
Big tournament for him. I mean, I think this is an important tournament for him because, look, I mean, the guy's got, you know, what's he playing for at this point with the career he's had and, you know, at the age of 30-ish, you know, it's, you know, I mean, it's not like he's going to panic if he doesn't, you know, win a title going into the French Open. But it would really help to keep his stock up if he does well in this tournament where, you know, if the weather turns out to be fairly sunny, you know, it gets pretty quick there. You know, the play plays pretty quick and dry, so he should do well there. If he doesn't do well and the conditions are good, then you got to say, well, gee, you know, maybe he's struggling a little bit too, and he's really not really where he can be or where he wants to be. I mean, let's remember, he's only lost to Djokovic and Meltzer this year, right? So it's not as if the guy is, you know, really in a slump. But he's gonna need to
Nadal. Well, Nadal in Miami too.
Well, then Nadal,
yeah,
in Miami.
Yeah.
But he needs to get up into that, get back and play those semis and finals again.
I think the last 2 years he's used this tournament as his barometer. He doesn't make a big deal out of Monte Carlo. I think he works his way into the clay season more than he used to. He used to go all out for those tournaments against Nadal. And maybe Federer's learned that he can't. And that's just not worth it. His thing is the French Open, and I'm going to work my way towards that. He's done that again this year. He didn't seem too concerned about losing to Monte Carlo. But this year Madrid comes a week earlier. I assume he'll have the same sort of plan to really use this and Rome to get ready for the French Open. So I think it is a big turn because he's reached the finals the last 2 years. Also, it was Soderling who was the last person to beat Nadal Clay, not Federer.
That was before the French, that's right.
The longest professional tennis match lasted 11 hours, 5 minutes, and took more than 3 days to finish. During the match, there were 980 total points played, 138 games, 2,189 strokes, and 489 backhands. And combined, the players spent over 11 hours on their feet. Just imagine how much longer they could have gone if they were wearing the ASICS Gel Resolution 3, with a Flexion Fit upper for extra stability. It's engineered to go deep into the fifth set. ASICS. Sound mind, sound body.
And the last man that we haven't discussed here, Djokovic, we want to get to him. Comes in, takes his home tournament. Now his record in 2007, 27-0. I don't think there was too much of a surprise of him winning that event. You know, it's obviously just a week before this tournament. I don't suspect that fatigue is any sort of factor really for him at all. He's going to get a late start as well, along with Federer and Nadal. Is it right now kind of a Djokovic-Nadal final in your mind until proven otherwise?
It seems like Djokovic comes in with a lot of with pretty much the perfect setup. He's got his rest from the early part of the season, but he's played some clay matches. He's obviously has his confidence pretty much intact. His draw is average. He has Ferrer in the quarters. Obviously, that's a tough one, but I still like Djokovic in that. Ferrer's reached the last two clay court finals, but you know, like you said, until proven otherwise, until he loses a match, you know, it's hard to pick against him.
Well, his stamina has really improved, and that, you know, this whole bit about his diet, eliminating gluten and pastas and carbs and things like that, it all makes a big difference. I think his game is more different or tougher on clay relative to hard than you would think, given, you know, the style he plays. I think it's more
demanding on him, you're saying?
Yeah, I think his results on clay have not reflected his results on, how good he is on hard. And I think there's more going on in terms of problems for him on clay than meets the eye. Some of those, like the French Open, and when you replayed Nadal, just didn't look like he was in the match in a sense. He looked good. And I think it's tough for him. I think with the slower court, I think he doesn't have that real quick turnaround, quick strike, change direction on the ball, go from offense to defense, quite as effective, defense to offense, quite as effectively as he does on hard courts. I think there's a big difference, a bigger difference than it seems for him going to clay courts. I'm really curious to see how he does. The stamina, that's been an issue in the past. And, the other thing is he going to be able to grind it out over those 2 weeks of matches? Sometimes at the slams, the Australian, he's done real well. And sometimes at the majors, he almost seems to lose, track of the thread a little bit, sort of like the Murray problem in a sense. I think there was that year at Wimbledon when he sort of screwed around and loses, in semis or quarters, a couple of years ago, when it looked like he sort of had the thing, pretty much wrapped up. Last year, he played a terrible match at Wimbledon. So he's taken his eye off the ball at majors a few times. It's really going to be interesting to see if he can... He could really translate and bring that, that confidence and that sort of really authority he had, hard court season.
But I think the good news for Djokovic fans is that the motivation's clearly going to be there. His track to the world number one, I think, has established itself as the top narrative of this year. You can debate whether it's about Federer kind of really sort of tailing off amongst the top two, but the talk has been pretty much exclusively about Djokovic in the big events, and for obvious reasons. And like you said, he's won Rome before, I believe, but there is room for many things he has not accomplished on clay. And I think the French is probably, he's made the semis, I believe, in all the majors, but I guess the most underwhelming to this point might be the French. So
his biggest thing to accomplish on clay is to beat Nadal. He's
right.
He's beaten everybody else, and he's been to all these finals, but he's never beaten Nadal on clay. He's played some really good matches against him.
Hey, Nadal's won 14 Masters on clay. Federer's won four or five, and Djokovic has won one. Rome, it was a good effort. But, so he's got a little bit of catching up to do.
Yeah, definitely. There is the women's tournament. Also, we did mention as a combined event. I know it's not as much, marquee names as we would usually expect, most notably the Williams sisters. Kim Clijsters out of Madrid. I think you can pretty much write them out of Rome, too. Some of that may be official already. And which we're just talking about off the air here, Pete. I think we, based on your words, we should look forward to the Brussels Masters coming up in a couple weeks. But why don't you explain that just a little bit?
Well, yeah, no, I think the Williams sisters have pulled out of everything before the French Open, or rather, out of the two, Madrid and Rome. So, and Clijsters is probably not going to play either of those either. It seems so. Basically, what are you looking at? Any of those women want to matches before the French Open? They're going to have to play Brussels, a small event. Well, there's another one in France as well, but they would have to play one of these small events. And can you imagine if they all ended up playing in Clijsters and the two Williams sisters said, hey, let's get some matches for the French Open, let's play Brussels. That would be a bigger tournament all of a sudden than pretty much anything that's happening.
It's like if New Haven took more great players on than like Cincinnati, something like that.
Right. So, yeah. I doubt that'll happen, by the way, because I sort of think the Williams sisters are coming back for Wimbledon. If they're going to play, I think at Wimbledon. Why should they play in clay? Their records have been pretty shaky these past couple of years.
Steve, I know you've touched on the women in your post a little bit, but it's like you said before, kind of the same old what we're seeing here. Without the biggest names, there was other biggest names. We can't really read as much into it as we'd like to.
Yeah, this is another women's tournament for the hardcore fans, which is fine. There's a lot of good players in it, everybody but the top names, but it's hard to judge going forward to the French Open when you don't see somebody like Clijsters, who would be the favorite for it in this tournament, or Serena Williams, who obviously would be a major contender. You sort of see this next group, which was, they've kept the WTA going this year, but it doesn't feel like a bigger tournament than say Stuttgart.
Yeah, I think it's a good example. Yeah.
Do you think there's any chance that Justine Hammond retires again?
Maybe she'll go to Brussels.
Exactly. She may decide. Man, I really shouldn't have pulled the plug again.
Yeah, well, the Kim Slam, like we said, the possibility that has, but that's kind of fallen by the wayside now that not that it couldn't happen, but we're saying, like you're saying here, without her and in the picture, it's just a harder thing to discuss.
Wait, did you say Kim Slam?
Yes. Yes.
Kim Slam.
Interesting idea. Kim Slam.
Yes.
Starts it here.
We're halfway through.
We're halfway through.
And we've barely even...
She should do well. I mean,
She wants to win that tournament more than any other, but she, it's a matter of whether she can play it.
If there's any matches to be played before the French Open, so we'll see how that happens. Thanks again for listening. For Pete, Steve, I'm Ed McGrogan. Tennis.com.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.